Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we bring the culture to horticulture on Monday afternoons.
That's right.
So today we're going to talk about herbs in medicine and healing. And we have a fun show today that delves into the history and contemporary uses of herbs to combat all of our health problems.
That's right. Everyone knows that all you need is herbs.
That's herbs. Right. And love. And all you need is love.
And it's a good sort of follow-up to last week's show about botanical art, because so much of of non-contemporary botanical art, of the historical, ancient, drawings.
Written information, right.
Was for this purpose,
Exactly.
For plant ID and for herbalists and, and pharmacists.
Carmen, it sounds like maybe we coordinated our shows.
We can pretend.
Do you think? So, a little brief history. Pharmacopoeia, literally drug making, in its modern technical sense, is a book that contains directions for the identification and the samples, or for the identification of herb samples and the preparation of compound medicines. It's usually published by some sort of authority or a government or a medical or pharmaceutical society. So an herbal is a collection or description of plants put together for medicinal purposes. It's expressed more elaborately, and it's a book containing the names and descriptions and often artwork of plants, usually with information on their virtues or their properties, and in particular their medicinal, tonic, culinary, toxic, hallucinatory, aromatic, and magical powers, as well as the legends associated with them.
So the herbals predated the pharmacopoeias, or were they contemporary?
I think pharmacopoeia is a more modern word.
Okay.
I think herbal is the historic word. So the herbals were often illustrated as well to assist with plant identification, and that kind of then turned into, the herbals actually kind of turned into how-to books,
right.
For gardening. So herbals were among the first literature produced in ancient Egypt, China, India, and Europe, as the medical wisdom of the day accumulated by herbalists and apothecaries and physicians. Herbals were also among the first books to be printed in both China and Europe. In Western Europe, herbals flourished for two centuries following the introduction of movable type, which was 1470 to 1670. So in the late 17th century, the rise of modern chemistry and toxicology and pharmacology reduced the medicinal value of the classical herbal. As a reference manual for botanical study and plant identification, herbals were supplanted by floras, which was more of a systematic accounts of the plants found growing in a particular region with scientifically accurate botanical descriptions, classifications, and illustrations.
Yeah, we saw some of that. We saw contemporary examples of that.
Of flora legiums and floras.
At Kew, when we were there.
Exactly. And still today, they're... governments and societies are producing florilegiums. Yeah. In fact, the Brooklyn Botanic Garden has a florilegium.
Yeah.
Herbals have seen a modest revival in the Western world since the last decades of the 20th century, as herbalism and the related disciplines, homeopathy and aromatherapy, have become popular forms of complementary and alternative medicine.
And I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, so that's what we're going to talk about today. But first, a little more history. Sorry, I'm boring everybody. The Edwin Smith Papyrus is the ancient Egyptian medical text and the oldest known surgical treatise on trauma. It dates from 1500 BCE. So that's like really super old. The Edwin Smith Papyrus is unique among the four principal medical papyri in existence that survive today. And it presents a rational and scientific approach to medicine in ancient Egypt, in which medicine and magic do not conflict. So this is really the first medicinal text. Magic would be prevalent in the cases of internal disease, which I found very interesting.
Oh, so, where it's mysterious.
Where it's mysterious, right? Versus like a top,
you know, topical skin or something that's visible to the naked eye.
Yeah, I found that very interesting. The ancient Greeks gleaned much of their medicinal knowledge from Egypt and Mesopotamia. Hippocrates was the father of medicine, and he was, you know, renowned for the Hippocratic Oath. He used about 400 drugs, most of which were plant origin. So then there's the materia medica, which in English is a medical material or substance. And it's the Latin medical term for a body of collected knowledge about therapeutic properties of plants. So the term derives from the title of a work by the ancient Greek physician Pedanius Dioscorides. I can't pronounce this.
Dioscorides.
Nice. In the first century. So this materia medica was used from the period of the Roman Empire until the 20th century, but now has generally been replaced in medical texts by the term pharmacology.
So let's get this straight. For 20 centuries, Dioscorides' book was the handbook on plant uses, medical uses for plants, right?
I believe so, yes.
So only recently has it been updated.
So
that might explain a few,
kind of archaic,
few things.
Right.
Hey, but he was, I guess he was pretty thorough.
Yeah, right? He must have been, right? I just want to talk historically also about the first physic gardens. Carmen and I were just in London. We did not have a chance to go see the Chelsea Physic Garden.
Yeah.
But these gardens, you know, were developed for the reason of medicinal uses. So 1334, the first one was in Venice and at Salerno.
Yes.
And then the 1540s, Pisa and Padua and Bologna. And in the 1560s, Zurich. 1570s was Paris. 1577 was Leiden. 1580 was Leipzig, and 1593 Montpellier. So these have very old historic origins, and these are just public gardens, public physic gardens.
Now they're part of some of them are part of universities, like the university, like the Padua and the Bologna gardens are part of the university system, and they're still being used.
So imagine that, ag school.
Oh my God, I would go there.
So now we're going to go a little to some contemporary times, and we're going to do our horticultural honor roll of the week.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you. Well, today the horticultural honor roll honors John Gerard, born in 1545 and died in 1612. He is the most famous of all the English herbalists. The herbal is the basis for our contemporary understanding of herbs today, as Alice was saying. His herbal, with two L's, of 1597 is, like most herbals, largely derivative. It appears to be a reformulation of Hieronymus Bock's Kruiderboek, subsequently translated into Dutch as Pemptades by Rembrandt Dodens, and thence into English by Carolus Clusius, then reworked by Henry Light in 1578 as New Herbal. This became the basis of Gerard's Herbal or General History of Plants that appeared in 1597 with its 1800 woodcuts. Although it's largely derivative, Gerard's popularity can be attributed to his evocation of plants and places in Elizabethan England and to the clear influence of gardens and gardening on this work. He had published in 1596 catalogus, which was a list of 1,033 plants growing in his garden. So hats off to John Gerard for distilling centuries of information into one text, not only for medicinal use, but also as a primer for gardening.
Exactly.
So people bought it not just, you know, to understand what plants they should grow for different ailments, but I think at that point, gardens started turning to an ornamental nature, mm-hmm. as we've sometimes talked about on the show.
And a more personal. And this allowed people to have a personal garden.
Right. It wasn't just for practical use.
Exactly. So let's get to the fun part of today's show, which mm-hmm. is our guests. We actually have two herbalists and from the streets of Brooklyn and Portland, Oregon. There's an amazing shop called the Herb Shop. S-H-O-P-P-E.
On Atlantic Avenue in Brooklyn.
On Atlantic Avenue mm-hmm. in Brooklyn. And it's a modern-day pharmacology or materia medica. So mm-hmm. as guests today, we have Nicole Weigel and Jackie Daniels. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
So Nicole earned her doctorate in neuropathic medicine from the Southwest College of Neuropathic Medicine in Tempe, Arizona, which is known as the most comprehensive nutrition and environmental health curriculum in neuropathic medicine.
It's naturopathic medicine, just to interrupt.
Oh, naturopathic. I'm sorry. I'm reading so fast. after graduating, you spent 1 year in residency at the in the Pacific Northwest with the talented healthcare team at Grain Integrative Health. And before medical school, you grew up in Reno, Nevada, and graduated from the University of Nevada, Reno, with a Bachelor of Science in Biology.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, good. And Jackie has been studying herbs and alternative healing for about 10 years now. She was an herbal specialist and a trainer at Whole Foods for 4 years and then moved to New York from Dallas about a year ago and now manages the Herb Shop.
Yep.
Okay. So we can read all about herbs and their powers for healing in all sorts of texts throughout history, and every culture, of course, has multiple uses for differing herbs. But tell us today some of the most popular herbs and what their uses are.
We see a lot of people looking for nettle in here. It's probably one of the most versatile herbs. You can use it for allergies, kidney function, adrenal function. It's very high in B vitamins and nutrients in general.
I use that for breast milk production.
See?
Yeah.
You can use it for everything. Uh-huh. Oat straw is another really good one. People coming in for nervous issues. It is really good for stress reduction, calming the monkey mind. And then slippery elm for digestive issues or sore throats even. It just helps to coat everything uh-huh. and reduce inflammation, repair damage.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I have a question for you, Nicole. Do you have a mentor, sort of a historical? We talked a lot about the sort of history of pharmacopoeia and herbs as medicine and how it was organized centuries ago. But do you have a historical person or a book that has influenced your work?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I remember as a kid, I somehow got my hands on one of these materia medicas. I must have found it in my mom's bookshelf or something. Mm. But this materia medica was by an author called Michael Moore, and not the controversial filmmaker Michael Moore.
It was like, wow.
He had a whole other life.
Yeah.
And I just remember being instantly fascinated, just the fact that there's things growing outside that can help us with anything from a common earache to hormonal imbalance. It just really piqued my interest with finding that book. So I think I would have to attribute it to Michael Moore, the herbalist.
Wow. That's really interesting. And how would you describe your sort of philosophy and path towards herbal remedies versus Western medicine? In your bio, we talked about mm-hmm. that you went to medical school.
Yes. So naturopathic medicine is a different form of medical school. So it's the same thing. It's 4 years. You learn basic sciences, but then also a lot of the curriculum focuses on learning pharmacology, but also learning about herbs and acupuncture and nutrition mm-hmm. and homeopathy and preventative medicines.
Mm-hmm.
So I had been really affected at a young age of wanting to use plant medicine. I find something so wholesome and innately right for using plants as medicine. I mean, they're just growing out outside where we can easily get a hold of them, and that really clicked with me. And looking into, I knew I wanted to see a doctor, but I knew I wanted to do alternative medicine where I could use these things.
Okay. Well, it sounds like a very intense program. I mean, it's a very, you have to have a science basis, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
To understand it.
Yeah, you got that. It was a really vigorous 4 years of my life, but I'm glad I made it through.
So tell us a little bit about the herb shop. When did that get started?
The herb shop was started in Portland, Oregon by Dr. JJ September 15th of 05.
Okay.
And then on the 6th anniversary, she opened the Brooklyn location in 2011.
Right, because Brooklyn and Portland are like, you know,
twin sisters.
Twin sisters, right.
Well, she traveled a lot back and forth between Portland and Brooklyn, and she kept constantly being inundated with questions and ending up with patients here, so she wanted to offer that same thing just on the other side.
Yeah, and the food is just as good. So
yeah, absolutely.
Well, it's interesting that you guys are on Atlantic Avenue, because Atlantic Avenue has a lot of halal and oil shops and stuff. It seems like the shop would fit in really well with that.
But
mix,
it also,
you know?
It's also on the bridge of like Fort Greene, Bottom Hill, Carroll Gardens, Park Slope.
You're in the right place for that. Yeah. You know, people are, I think, maybe a little bit more open-minded in that zip code.
I think so,
you know?
Too.
Yeah, definitely. We see a lot of everyone in here. So
yeah.
It's every culture, every type of person. Everyone's interested, even if it's just, you know, walking by, checking it out. Some people come in and they have, you know, a specific list of things that they want. But
Yeah, because, you know, you go into a typical pharmacy or even a, you know, like a chain type of pharmacy.
Like and CVS or whatever.
And they have all kinds of stuff on the shelves, all kinds of herbs, but nobody to help you
right.
and explain how to use it. So what are you going to do? You're just going to randomly take things that the label suggests you take? I mean,
right.
what I like about the concept is that there's a person there,
mm-hmm.
you know, that can, you know, answer questions and help you, you know, like sort of listen to you and help you figure out what you should take. Right?
Yes, I completely agree with that, because I've seen patients come in on a whole bag of supplements, and they're like, I've been taking this. I just went to the store, and, you know, it looked like a good idea. So it is really nice that at the herb shop they offer somebody to help you figure out what's the right product for you, so you're not just kind of stabbing in the dark there looking for the right thing.
Right, right. Hang on. We have to take a break, unfortunately. Give us a few minutes. Stay on the line. And we'll be back. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
You are listening to Onion's Milk by Iggy Dean on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from We Dig Plants.
Every August for the past 10 years, Heritage Foods USA has had the great honor of announcing the arrival of a new generation of Good Shepherd Ranch heritage turkeys and a new chapter in the history of an endangered species. You have to eat them to save them. While many farmers now use the term, Frank Reese and his team raised the truest example of the original heritage turkey. According to the USDA, they remain the only farm allowed to use the name Heritage on their label. We hope you reserve your healthy, naturally mating, flying, standard bronze, bourbon red, white Holland, slate, black, or Narragansett turkey today. Let's do it again and support the brightest hope for the turkey. We guarantee these are the best tasting turkeys ever, or your money back. Prices start at $75. For more information, visit heritagefoods.com.
Hi, welcome back to We Dig Plants. I know I'm going to get my turkey from Patrick this year.
I mean, what a good salesman.
Yeah.
And let's talk about that song, Onions Milk.
Yes, thank you, Joe, for an appropriate song.
Perfect. Do you guys have any have any thoughts on Onions Milk?
Jackie?
I hear a lot of people putting it in their syrups, actually.
Hmm.
Yeah, cough syrups and syrups for sinus infections.
Oh.
So, yeah, why not?
Good.
So let me ask you, and you both can answer this. I'll go to you first, Nicole. What kind of illnesses, what do you see most frequently as an illness that your clients want treated?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a couple different things. I would say a lot of people these days have digestive orders, and that could be anything from heartburn to IBS, constipation, you name it.
The gut.
There's a lot of issues there for people, and naturopathic medicine and herbal medicine in particular are really great for treating these conditions. So definitely see a lot of that. Another really common thing I see is anxiety and depression. Stress can take a huge toll on people and our mental and emotional health as well. So a lot of people suffer from this, and those medications can be really hard for some people to handle, like antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications. So a lot of people want an alternative solution for that.
So tell us about some stress medicines. I think most people will relate to this.
Yeah,
so there's a couple of different categories. So there's a certain type of herbs called adaptogens, and they essentially help your body better able to adapt to stress. So that's one category. So things like that are like glycyrrhiza, which is licorice root, and holy basil, and ashwagandha, and ginseng. So that category, and those also help with energy too. So when we get stressed and run down, we start getting fatigued. So those are a great class for those. And then there's also a group of herbs that are going to be called nervines, and those are basically more calming and sedating and can help you if you're feeling anxious. So things like rhodiola and scutellaria and kava and what else? Valerian.
Valerian, right. Yes.
So
that smells
like that.
So bad. Can I just say, I have some in my cabinet, and I've taken it. It is just about the worst smelling thing. I had to like segregate it, but it has no side effects. I mean, unlike and you can't get addicted to it like other,
like Vicodin,
like you know, like other sleep, like other sleep aids. It does smell foul, but it helps you sleep in a slowly relax your body, and then, you know.
Yeah, absolutely, because some of those medications, too, that people use for sleep, just actually their job is to just knock you out so you fall asleep, and doesn't necessarily make sure you're getting good quality sleep, whereas Valerian's job is to relax you and not get you into that mode of getting into the deeper sleep, which is going to be more beneficial in the long run.
Yeah, I have a question. So while we're on the subject of, obviously, these are, I wouldn't call them narcotics, you know, these plants, but it seems that the government is going towards trends of trying to regulate these plant medicines, right? And update us on what's happening in that regard, because it obviously affects places like the herb shop and people like yourselves whose livelihood depends on this.
Yeah, so I have an opinion about that. So definitely, I think there's a lot of companies that make herbs that aren't of great quality. So some people might have been like, well, you know, I've tried one of these herbs before, but it really didn't do much for me. And I think that goes to show that some people are selling herbal products that don't have what they say are in them, or don't have like they didn't harvest the herb at the correct time and doesn't have all the medicinal properties that it should have. So in a sense, I think that a certain amount of regulation is going to be a good thing for herbal medicine, because people realize that like, oh, these actually do work because they're getting good quality stuff. And that's what's so important about the herb shop here, is they really make sure that they're getting the right quality of things.
See, that's what I think about. Like when I go into, you know, I'm one of those people that goes into CVS.
Yeah.
And I'm like looking around for the alternative stuff instead of the, you know,
especially
Pfizer,
when you have,
Johnson.
Children.
Exactly.
You know, you don't want to give them like too powerful. You want to like err on the side of safety.
Right.
And, you know,
so, and that's the thing. Like, so, you know, you're standing in front of this cornucopia of product and you don't know what to do, you know, and you read the labels. And then I'm always thinking, well, like, is this expired? Like, how long has this been sitting on the shelf? What's the, like, rate of
the dosage? There's no help.
It's and nobody can tell you that at CVS, you know?
Yeah, I agree. That's definitely very confusing. And then even some of these like so-called natural products could be have some fillers or additives in them that just aren't going to be the best option for you, and you could do something more natural and that's going to work.
Exactly. So regulating it would be a good idea. But the flip side of that, too, is that if they treat them like drugs, then what happens, you know?
Yeah, and that's a scary thought, too, because we don't want to have our herbal medicine taken away from us just because it can't be patented and mass-produced like some drugs are. So
right.
That is, you're right, that's kind of a scary place to be in. So I think that the goal is to have good quality but not to have it be inaccessible.
So are you seeing, I know there's a trend towards this, just like, you know, everybody's organic and, you know, like these are kind of marketing terms that we're using. Are you seeing an increase in Western medicine's use of herbs?
Yeah, that's kind of a tricky question. I know that a lot of conventional doctors aren't trained using herbs, so many of them aren't comfortable in prescribing them. And a lot of, there's not as much research behind some herbal therapies as there are for the traditional medicine. So I think it kind of depends on the doctors. I like to think that some more conventional doctors are becoming more comfortable working in a healthcare team where they refer to herbalists or refer to a natural doctor that can kind of take care of that for them, somebody that knows what they're doing in that realm. I don't know, Jackie, do you have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, I don't know that they're necessarily recommending herbals, but I have seen them going a little bit more mainstream with the more like the nutritional aspect or like fish oil I've seen recommended.
Yeah.
They're recommending a lot vitamin E and primrose oil. They've started making Manuka honey patches for burn victims.
Oh, is that right?
But also we're seeing it going mainstream with Dr. Oz. He's kind of forcing that. So maybe not so much in the doctor's office, but I think it is coming to the forefront in general because people are very interested.
Well, what do you think about the pharmaceutical companies? Are you seeing it from their point of view? Are they
definitely
coming?
Not.
No.
Yeah, well, they don't really want us infringing on their territory, but also the pharmaceutical companies you know, they have a patent. You can't patent an herb, so they are not going to be able to make any money off of it. So, of course, they're not going to back it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah,
and I think the only way that doctors are going to, I think, really collaborate and include alternative medicine is if they are honestly forced to study it in medical school. Don't you think, Nicole, like if it's part of their curriculum, if it's given the respect, you know, that it deserves, because we were just talking about 20 centuries of Dioscorides, right? And I wonder if anybody has ever taken his, you know, the information that he, you know, kind of
his herbal
and actually did studies on it. That would be a very interesting study, don't you think, Alice? To take what he, you know,
I'm sure somebody's done it.
The list of plants that he and the various treatments that they would be used for and put it in a modern day context, did some actual studies on whether those plants worked or not.
Well, Nicole, you must know the answer to that.
Yeah, I think that the largest problem is finding somebody who's going to pay for the study.
Yeah.
If a company can't patent the product after they study its uses, because it takes a lot of money and time and energy to go into these multi, like double-blind studies and getting them all the way through the FDA approval. So I think that it definitely would help a lot of conventional medicine to get more geared towards that if they had it in their education, because I don't think that they have a problem with using it or against it. It's just the lack of understanding of it. Mm-hmm. So I think that that would be a great idea to incorporate it more in
And I think the National Institute of Health would be the perfect place to study it, right?
Carmen, you're so optimistic.
Well, I'm just putting it out there. If anybody's listening,
if anybody's looking for a project,
listen, guys. You know, maybe Obamacare. Maybe there's a little bit of money in there.
Okay, this is just crazy talk.
Hey, look, I'm just trying to be, you know, trying to think of where the money can come. You're right. The money's not going to come from the pharmaceutical companies.
But
you know?
But the thing is, here's the thing. Here's what I keep thinking about. New York Botanic Garden, right, has this huge research department that Pfizer pays for. And that's what I'm thinking about. And they pay for all of these very serious scientists and and you know, research physicians to go, you know,
hunt
around the
plants,
world and discover the plants. And then they do, you know, rape and pillage the earth and get this plant, and, you know.
Well, they, so patent some,
they patented parts of it,
parts
you
of
know.
It.
I mean, my father, when he was going through lung cancer, the drug was Taxus.
That Taxol.
He was Taxol that he was using, which is the U plant, you know. So
somebody had to find that.
Yeah.
And
yeah. But I just, you know, I just wonder how much Pfizer is really invested in this, or, you know, kind of what they're, maybe we should have someone from Pfizer on as a counter.
Yeah.
Counter. Okay. So what is the one remedy that you think every person should have on their countertop?
Yeah.
What's the, what's something that you see most of the population missing?
I think everybody needs a good adrenal tonic on their counter.
Adrenal tonic.
Yeah, when you address the adrenal glands and address the adrenal fatigue, you're kind of covering so much more ground because that kind of tends to lead to hormone imbalances, digestive upset, sleep issues, anxiety, issues with blood sugar and blood pressure. So when you address that, you kind of cover a ton of ground.
And what kind of plants, are adrenal tonics?
You got rhodiola, ashwagandha, pretty much any of the adaptogenic herbs. Eleuthero is another really good one. Nettle is a great one to throw in there. Oat straw.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with Jackie on that one. She hit that nail on the head. So, like I had talked about before, with all of the stress that people are under these days, that our adrenal glands are our stress glands. They're these two little glands that sit on top of our kidneys there, and their whole job is to help us secrete things like adrenaline to help us deal with the fight or flight situation.
Right.
I'm sure you've probably heard that before, fight or flight.
Yes, yes.
But today we're always fighting or flighting. There's always like a deadline, or we have to get to work, or there's a million emails to be answered, or we're taking care of our kids. There's So these adrenal glands are just going, 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 and they need a lot of support to help us keep going.
And how to say what I want in 40 words when I'm on Twitter. 40 characters.
Exactly.
Well, I have to say, the thing that I use all the time as a general for all kinds of things is ginger.
I thought you were going to say alcohol.
No, that's also plant-based. That's also on the counter daily. But ginger, I love it. Alice knows I put it in everything. I put it in brandy. I cook with it. I really feel like it is an amazing herb.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, ginger is fabulous. And like I was talking about before, a lot of people have digestive issues, and ginger is perfect for digestion. It helps stimulate your digestion. It helps with nausea. It helps increase circulation in your body. It's just a really wonderful plant.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you need more than just what's in the ginger ale bottle. Like,
I
need, you know, I think there's precious little ginger in that.
Yeah, I was going to say that's like just sugar.
No, the ginger ale, I love the fresh smell of it, you know? I think it's
fresh grated ginger is really wonderful.
It's great in everything, you know?
Well, yeah, I'm a big St. John's wort person.
Oh, yeah?
That's my kind of go-to thing. Well, tell us the website. Do a little plug for the shop. Unfortunately, we have to wrap up time, but I want you guys to give a little shout out to the shop.
Yeah, the website is just theherbshopbrooklyn.com. And if you want to visit us, the address is 394 Atlantic, and we're between Hoyt and Bond. And generally can get to us from probably the Barclays station is one of the closest. But, yeah, we're surrounded by a million subway stations.
Yeah.
So everyone can get here.
Yeah.
You're right by the Nets stadium, right?
Yes.
So, well, thank you guys so much for joining us and for giving us a little insight to our health and how we can better it in a more natural method.
I know I'm going to come see you guys.
Yeah.
Soon.
maybe today on the way home.
Yeah, we might stop by. I'm feeling my adrenal glands kind of
loosening up, feeling better.
Just thinking about it.
Yeah. Okay, so the herbshop.com.
And shop is spelled
S-H-O-P-P-E.
Yes.
Shoppy.
Shoppy.
Right.
Shoppy. The old English way.
The old English. So join our Facebook fan page and win free prizes weekly at random. keep up the gardening. And
I just want to say the show is produced by Jack Inslee.
Yes, of course.
And engineered by Joe G. Joe always finds amazing music that complements our show. Thank you. Stay tuned. Next week, we have another great show. We're listening to We Dig Plants. See you in the garden.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.